And welcome to the Business Growth Show, where we talk about all components of business and how to utilize them for exponential growth. My name is Nathan Katsiotis. I'm a business growth expert where I help business owners grow and scale to create wealth and freedom. Today, I have an awesome guest. His name is Michael Agliaro II. And from an early age, Michael Agliaro II was introduced to martial arts and has since dedicated his life to martial arts mastery. And as he grew, he combined that knowledge with a thirst for personal growth and development. And his first book, which he wrote at 18 years old, is called How to Be a Modern Day Warrior. And it is both a manifesto of martial arts and the personal growth mindset of inner power and strength. And he's built world-class events that's captivated his students, and he's even trained in the elite world of executive bodyguard protection. And today, as an esteemed expert in the fields of accountability, communication, and mindset, he empowers individuals on their path to greatness through transformative coaching and mentorship. And he's a highly respected and dynamic speaker who captivates audiences with the wisdom of his empowering insights. Welcome, Michael Agliaro II. Thank you for being on my show.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That was such a great intro.
You're welcome, mate. I am, to put it with plenty of energy. A lot of people have said they want to take the snippet of how I intro people and use it after. So feel free to, if you like, mate. It's going to be fun. So yeah, awesome to have you on the show. I'm sure it's going to be great for everyone watching and listening today. So you're a successful entrepreneur. So for those people who don't know who you are, just please introduce yourself by telling us more about you and your journey.
Yeah. So I've been doing martial arts 20 years now. I started when I was 4 years old. It became a passion. It just something I'm really good at. When I was 16, I decided conventional schooling was not for me. So I decided to go a different route. And I left when I was 16, started my first business, Warrior Today, where I taught everyone from kids to adults, successful business owners, college students, everyone, how to protect themselves, their families, and build a certain level of confidence. And then from there, I started to transition more into communication and mastering the art of communication. And then from that, decided to transition over into accountability mindset. And somewhere along the way, I decided it'd be really fun to get certified in executive protection, armed bodyguarding, and armed asset protection. So I went and did that on and off a little bit, and got to hang out with some really cool people. Like, I'll share a few that I'm allowed to share, like Jay Abraham, Kevin Harrington, Lou Ferrigno, which is the old and original Incredible Hulk, which was a lot of fun, and did a bunch of cool stuff like that.
Yeah, awesome, mate. What a journey. And you've achieved so much, you know, at a young age. And I think it's a testament, right? No matter what age you're at, you know, old or young, right? That, you know, you can always create a lot, you know, with the right mindset and direction, right? To keep moving forward. And I can see some similarities. Like, I dropped out of school myself as well. And so that, you know, school was not for you at 16. I think that's when it started to go downhill for me as well. But I kept in a little bit longer, but then I got out too. So yeah, very cool and understandable for people that think differently, I think, which is definitely what you do, you know, to most. So let's just touch on a little bit about, you know, starting a business in 16, because I think that's a great one. I started selling VCD movies, which is like movies on two CDs, when I was at 16 at high school, when CD burners were out. So that was my sort of initial business. But I'd love to hear it from your perspective of the business. And what was it like at that young age to, you know, get into it and start to get that momentum in business?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll give a little more background, right? So when I was a kid, my father's a huge entrepreneur. So he always pushed me to go make money, right? How are you going to earn money? Shoveling driveways. And, you know, over time, I realized, like, I just wasn't going to be great working for someone else. So I said, I guess I got to work for myself. So I decided to found Warrior Today as that. And at 16, you know, it's such an interesting thing. You know, you're so young, you think you have everything figured out. You know everything, right? Like sales, oh, I could sell anything. Marketing, yeah. And I very quickly learned I didn't know it all, right? So I took the time, I educated myself, I reached out, got mentors, and I grew that business significantly from 16 to 18. But I will share, the most challenging part about starting a business at 16 is no one wants to take you serious, right? You have no credibility, you have no background. They go, oh my gosh, I'm going to give this kid money. I guess he'll teach me, right? So I learned a lot about how to build and establish credibility at a young age, which I do believe carried me significantly into that book and a lot of the great opportunities I've had through teaching and running Warrior Today, which is teaching is always my passion. I still teach martial arts to this day, even though I don't run Warrior Today anymore. I do still teach privately every so often.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the comment you mentioned there, which is so good about like, I thought I knew it all, but then I realized I didn't. And I think that's where a lot of entrepreneurs, even older, a lot older people can get stuck with that pride and ego element, right? Like I should know this or, you know, this area. Whereas, you know, knowing that you don't know much or know nothing and that you need to learn it is a great mindset to have that, you know, and great that you learned that from a young age and then sought out that knowledge to fast track. You know what you did as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it was so interesting, right? Like, you know, I used to run 2-day seminars, was like my favorite thing to do. You get 25 people in my dojo, and then you make a lot of money really quick, right? And at 16 in 2 days, you make 7-10 grand. You're like, whoa. Then you don't have the self-control because you're like, oh, I'll just make more. And you don't have the whole concept of taxes and having to claim it and do all that fun stuff and overhead. So it was fun learning it because now I'm able to really navigate that stuff at a different level because I learned it so early and had to navigate how to move money, how to position it. So you don't, you know, Uncle Sam doesn't take all of it. He can still take some of it, just not all of it. And all that stuff, as well as being able to lead a room full of people. I mean, those seminars, 25 people, it was not a huge room dojo I was running it out of. It was a 2-car garage that I had all tricked out. But yeah, it was really awesome. It was such a great opportunity to learn. And, you know, the one key thing around it that I think made the difference was no one held my hand. You know, people let me fall. And I got to learn that way. And I do believe that played a huge part in my success. It was falling, scraping my knees, busting my elbow and going, whoa, so this is what it takes to run a business, which was really awesome.
Yeah, I love that, mate. So awesome with doing that. And yeah, I remember me, I you know, later on, I didn't start as early, but when I eventually did my business, I got to do a little bit of door-to-door sales, right? And that was like, half. Imagine knocking on 50 doors. I did over 50, you know, people in a day and getting no's basically from all of them, right? So I think like what you said is going through and finding out how hard business is and that you do need to, you know, do the work, right? And you do need to get rejected, you know, and you do need to, you know, lose money or going, why isn't this working, and try and figure it out, you know, is a big skill. It doesn't just, you know, you post something and then you're a millionaire overnight or something like some people think, right, on social media these days.
Yeah, for sure. It's so crazy. Like, you know, it was, I love your point about being able to take the no. Like, man, when I was first starting, it was such a like hard thing for me to handle being told no, 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 no. And then eventually it's like, you almost love it. It's like, well, that person said no, but the next person might not. And it became a drive for me at such a young age. It was awesome. It was so funny you brought that up. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is so true. And I think a lot of people don't have the resilience, right? Because they haven't gone through something like that. And I think especially in the younger generation these days where, you know, they've got everything on the fingertips, right? And everything like that. And it's easier to do things, which means they don't go through as much of the hard stuff, you know, as what other people, you know, maybe had to do in the market, you know, when it was younger, earlier in stage of life. So I think, yeah, really awesome points, man. And awesome that you've, you know, move forward and what you've created. So let's get more into communication now, because I know you're big on this, and I know a lot about communication as well, but I love to hear it from your perspective. And communication is both verbal and nonverbal as well, right? So do you want to share maybe a bit about that and the percentages, so, you know, make people aware initially for those that are unaware?
Yeah. So there's, I'd say even there's 3 points to communication, right? Verbal, nonverbal, which is body language, and then almost like the intuitive, right? There's always this intuition that plays a huge part in communication. And I do believe that's like, which I might be jumping ahead of myself here, but I do believe that's one of the key parts that's left out a lot of the time is your intuition, other people's intuition, being able to read body language and being able to read. And I love this phrase. I heard it from someone years ago. I don't remember who it was, but read the language that they're speaking, right? And really understand it. So that's like the three key points of communication that I've learned over the past 20 years of doing different stuff that involved it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that extra element of the intuitive, because you're right. It's something that I've learned from one of my coaches called situational awareness, right? It's like what you do in that moment, what to say, what not to say, when to say it is a skill, right? That people need to learn as well.
Yeah. And, you know, in martial arts, right, I used to have the hierarchy of importance, right? So it's like breathing, then it's communication, and then so on, so on, so on down it. And I used to have gurus come to train in my dojo, and they would go, "Why do you have communication so high?" And I'm like, "It's the number one thing in any conflict that could happen. It's communication is the key. Is it going to escalate, de-escalate? Where is it going to go?" And that's why I put it so high up there. So I've been practicing that from the young age of martial arts going into the executive protection. Then I really want to just study what are the key components behind this that make communication. How do you become good at it, right? Because anyone can talk, right? But to talk well and understand is really different. So
yeah, love that, mate. Really powerful. And so let's get into it more from maybe a verbal perspective now. So what makes someone, you know, like a great verbal communicator?
Yeah, so I'd say there's probably three key points, right? Being able to articulate what you're thinking, right? And people go, "Well, isn't articulating just speaking?" No, you have to be able to really articulate the thoughts that are in your head, which is number one. Number two is being able to use and understand subconscious triggers when communicating, right? And then number three, and this is where I normally throw people for a loop, is tonality. Tonality leads to perceived emotions, right? Because like if I sit here and talk like this, you're probably going to think I'm not having a great time. Compared to when I use tonality, it's like, wow, I'm having a great time communicating, right? So those are the three key areas around verbal communication that I think a lot of people either overlook, or they just look at one, like the articulation of what they say.
Yeah, great points there. I love that area there. So you mentioned a little bit before about like a challenging situations, right? If they come up and like de-escalating. So let's say it's a challenging conversation, whether or not it's necessarily a fighting one, but a challenging conversation. It could be anything, right? Where maybe there's some emotion, right? That's there in it, which could be any type of emotion. What do you think, we should be looking at to ensure that we're effectively communicating, right, in those moments?
So in times of stress, right, there's heightened emotions. And that's the first thing to understand, is that whoever you're communicating with is at a heightened level of communication. So two of the three, I'll give you the number one most important tool in the toolbox of communication I teach, and I'll do it for a business perspective, right? So say you have a disgruntled client. He's just, "Oh my goodness, you didn't deliver, I don't know, a package to my house on time, or it was destroyed," whatever it is, right? And they're up here and I'm down here. The goal is to bring them from up here all the way down to where I'm at. And the number one key for that is mimicking, right? So I need to mimic the patterns that they're speaking. Like, "Mr. Jones, I completely understand you're frustrated. And I get that this is really difficult, but let's take it down a little bit. Let's start communicating here." And I'm controlling that conversation, right? Because he might be up here, I need to bring him down. So I do that by not matching tonality, but matching speech patterns. Like if he says, "I'm so angry," I need to be strategic and listen, right? And this is where a lot of people forget or slip up, is they don't listen to listen, they listen to respond. I always listen to listen, so I can articulate what I'm thinking in a very, very well, good way. And then I use tonality to bring them down, right? If they're up here talking, "Oh, I'm so angry," and I don't want to yell on the podcast, right? And they're cussing at you and all that stuff, I might talk in a slower tone. "Hey, Mr. Jones, I completely understand you're frustrated." I don't want to match his energy and his emotion. I want him to match mine. And people normally say, "Well, Michael, they don't come down." It's like, "Well, how long did you try?" They go, "Well, 30 seconds. No, I need to be down here. I learned this from Chris Voss. He was an FBI negotiator. He's a world-class communication expert. And he talks about bringing the tone down, right? Mimicking the speech. I understand you're frustrated. And I think those are the key points, especially in business. It's really easy to get ramped up with them. It's really hard to stay down. Same thing with an employee, with a spouse, any situation. I want to bring them down. I don't want to escalate them up, right?
Yeah, I love that. So true. And it was, I actually just did a podcast the other day, and there was a great point that he made, big on neuroscience, was that when we feel an emotion, or let's just say it's anger or something, if it's a really big one like that, then we only actually feel it for 90 to 120 seconds in the body, right? And then what happens is most people replay the event and then it keeps coming out. So it lasts a lot longer. So if you know that, then allow the person that they're going to be angry for a couple of minutes, but then it's like, you know, you can bring them down, right? Then, you know, it's not like it's going to necessarily keep going on further. So I think that's, some really great points that you did there. And let's talk a little bit more about the listening, because I think that was a really great point that you did, because a lot of people are, you know, you can see them sometimes, and I've done this in the past as well, where I'm thinking about the next thing, right? Instead of really focusing, right? And when you do focus, people can tell as well from an energetic perspective, and then you can then have a better response. So what's a way that you think that people can maybe practice this, or how can they do this and get better at this?
Yeah. So I teach this philosophy about wants and needs, right? And anytime someone's upset, it's because a want or a need is not being met, right? And the key to listening is to listen to hear the want or need that wasn't being met. And the reason I say that is it forces you to slow down and really listen, because you're not making it about you anymore. It's all about the other person. Well, what need wasn't being met? What emotion are they feeling? Why are they feeling the emotion? And when you understand that, you can now prevent them from replaying that story, right? So they don't go back to the heightened emotion. And I've been there too and done it. But when you understand that it all stems from the want or need not being met, you can understand the reasoning. And now I can help them meet that need. Might not be the way they want, but I can help them meet it in another way by listening. And I hear this a lot on the one-on-one coaching I do with business owners, with their wife, actually, spouses, kids, is they don't feel heard, because you're automatically trying to listen to respond. You got to slow it down. What's the want or need? And I believe that, man, out of probably 55 people now that I've run through that process and taught about listening to listen, no one has come back to me to need to repeat the process, relearn it, do anything, because they slowed down. And that's really a key component to listening. Slow down, listen for the want and need, and then respond to fix the want or need that's not being met.
Yeah, love that. So true. And one point that I want to make with my wife, Irene, who I know you know as well, is, so sometimes with women as well, and so this can go both ways, right? So no matter if you're a male or female, whatever the relationship is, right, is that sometimes they don't want it to be fixed, whatever that is. So it's like, I just want to be heard, listened to, and right. And then I'm getting better at this, is like saying, like, do you want me to help you with this, or do you want me to solve this for you?
Yeah.
Or like that. Sometimes I just want to, you know, a bit of a cuddle, just want to be heard. And this could be anybody as well, right? And then you move on, because at that moment, it might not be the right time for that person emotionally. To be able to do it, even though it could be the best solution in the world, then, you know, it might not be the right time. Does that come up as well?
Oh yeah. You have no idea. And even me and my girlfriend, we have a rule. She's not allowed to get upset with me if I say, hey, do you want me to fix the problem or listen to the problem? And she goes, I want you to listen. I go, okay. I just sit there as hard as it is, right? And 99% of business owners were problem solvers. We want to fix the problem. And sometimes she goes, yeah, I want the solution. And I'm like, when that time comes, I'm like always crossing my fingers, like, please, please. And then I do it. But one of the cool things too, right? Like, there's so many people who understand that, but then don't respect it. It's really hard for me. I'll be completely transparent. It's really hard sometimes to not fix the problem. But I have to respect that she doesn't want that. And that's a huge part of communication, right? Being able to respect the other person that you're listening to. And that's why I'm an Italian from New Jersey. So respect is huge for me, right? Anyone who's from New Jersey knows that. But being able to respect what they say, their wishes, right? Like, hey, I don't want you to solve it. Okay. What do you want? And that's the other thing that I do now too. which you might want to take this one from me, is I go, well, what do you want from me right now? She'll go, well, I just want to be held. I go, okay, I'll hold you. And I hold her. I make it so easy now. I just ask the question, right? To make it simple for me.
I love it. And that's probably linked to the love language, if I'm thinking strategically here, right? Because my wife is physical touch is a highest love language. So there would be definitely an element there of that. But asking the question, right, will likely bring something like that out about what they want at that time, which is pretty powerful. So love that. All these different elements here, right? It's all linked to business, right? And how we think as the business owner and how we're communicating with people around us. Let's talk more around the nonverbal body language side of things now, because I think this is more important, than necessarily the words that we're talking about. So do you want to talk more about the importance and some areas around the nonverbal cues or the body language, and maybe some examples like that for everyone?
Yeah, for sure. And it's so funny. I first started learning about body language in martial arts, right? You need to learn how people are going to move, where they're going to move. And then I went to executive protection and I really learned, executive protection is 80% reading body language and understanding communication. That's what it comes down to. So I really started to master it there. But some of the key things around it that play a huge part in communication is how you carry yourself. Like, I'm not hunched over right now, right? And you're definitely not either. And I can say in person, because we just got to meet in person, you carry yourself very well. I hope I do too. I hope I wasn't like all hunched over. But how you carry yourself, how you position yourself, are you tense or are you loose, right? Because I can carry myself very confidently and not be all macho, muscle man tight, right? I can stand here and be calm. How I move my hands, right? One of the number one keys of body language when people start to get upset is they start to clench their fist or rub one hand, right? So I read that. And when I'm on Zoom, you can do this. People go, well, you can't do that if you're not in person. I can do it on Zoom, right? I can tell when people start to get sad. The other thing is, some people like to make this part of it. I do. Some people like to argue with me about it, but eye contact is a huge part of body language, right? Are you looking in their eyes? Are you looking at their chest? Where are you looking, right? And that's another key component to it, right? I don't want to talk to someone who's looking at the ground. I want to talk to someone who's also going to be confident, look me in the eyes. We're going to articulate well. And those are all the key things. And, business owners, a lot of the time, I've noticed this now, it's a pattern I've noticed. And I like picking up on patterns, especially with human behavior. It's like my favorite thing to study. Business owners love to overly be confident, right? And I think you are a perfect example of someone who is just confident in themselves. And that's a huge part, because business owners will become overconfident or try to compensate for, if their business isn't doing well through being that. When it's, you just need to be normal like this, just sit confidently, own your space, but not take over other people's space, which is another huge thing in body language that happens. And I should have pointed it out at the event we got to spend time together at, right? Is you get to watch all these people's body language, how they talk to you, how they come up to you, how they shake your hand, right? We used to always say in the dojo, don't give a weak handshake. Always assert that you're a confident person through your handshake. All these things play a huge part in body language. And I feel a lot of the time the little things are overlooked, right? Like eye contact, body, how my shoulders just sit relaxed. They're not tight. Tightness resembles stress. So like if I was tight, right, and you're the podcast host, you're probably going to assume, oh, I'm stressing Michael out, but I'm relaxed, right? So those little key things are really important to watch.
Yeah, definitely love that, mate. Really powerful. And just one thing I'll add around the eyes, which it's definitely important to look people in the eyes from an NLP perspective, is that there's eye movements, right, that happen with people. And this can determine which part of the brain that they're accessing, right? Their verbal, their auditory kinesthetic, or their audio digital, representational system, and left or right. We're not going to go into all of that detail now, but what will happen is someone will look you ideally, or you look someone in the eye, but then you'll go to a particular spot, right? So where you're gathering some information or potentially creating some information. And then if it's something like in the future that you're envisioning, and then you'll look back again. So be aware that not everyone's going to, it probably will be weird if 100% of the time they would look directly at you.
Just staring.
Going, what's going on with this person like that?
Yeah.
It will be both elements, but make sure that, because you'll do that naturally, that you are going back to the middle. Because I think it's easier to stay in one of those areas to access it instead of, creating that connection as well.
Yeah. People get comfortable looking away, and you, I love NLP. I've done a lot of it, and I teach it some. I didn't know you did that. So now we got something to talk about afterwards too. But like the other thing with the eyes too, like it's the tell. Where are they looking? How do I understand it? And that's such an important thing to understand. Where they're looking, what does it mean? Why are they looking there? Right? Like looking down, what does that mean? Looking up, looking to the sides, and all of that is super, super important. I'm really glad you brought that up. I didn't know you did NLP and stuff like that. So it's awesome.
Yeah, definitely, man. Master practitioner, it's so important because I think like you, right? Mindset is one of the biggest things in business. You could have all the best strategies and tactics in the world, but if there's something in here that's blocking you or holding you back, then you're not going to take the action, right? And move forward. So yeah, so important. Love that you've done it as well. And there's all these little tools that we build over time, right? In our tool chest, there's as a coach, like, you know, you are now to help people or just connect with people better, to communicate better. Cause sometimes, I don't know, it comes naturally, right? Like it's like a, it, like anything, right? You're leveling up with your skills, but your level of communication, you start to become natural at a lot of these things, which is great. You don't realize necessarily you're doing it, but you're stacking. And I think, you know, and then the beliefs complement that, because I know that I can basically connect with anybody, and it's happened basically every time, because the naturally the way that I am, and I'm you know, looking at the situation, I'm communicating in a particular way, and I will connect with anybody, right, in that moment. Whereas other people, if they're not aware of this, they could rub someone off the wrong way or go, something's a bit wrong about this person or something like that. And that could potentially stop a business deal. It could, you know, lose a client. It could, you know, create some other issue down the line, right? That, you know, could affect you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many opportunities I've watched dissolve in seconds because people don't know how to read other people, don't know how to communicate in certain situations, can't situation, they don't have zero situational awareness. And I've watched, man, the worst one, and it like haunts me that this person did this. I watched they were going to get $30 million on an exit, and because of one comment they made in a room, went away. And I'm sure you're like, you could imagine what my face was like in this moment. I was like, oh my goodness, I just talked to you about that too. But yeah, and the mindset plays such a huge part, right? Because if you're not in the correct mindset while communicating, it's going to dissolve it, and people will become repulsed by what is the opposite of theirs, right? So if you can't read what mindset they're at, it becomes extremely difficult to communicate with them or build a relationship with them. Like how I communicate with certain male clients versus certain female clients is very, very different, because the men will respond differently than the women will, right? I tell the men, I say like, hey, you're getting this, the women get this. And, you know, I'm very clear with that with them, which I think there's this line that people try to walk, and it's a sensitive topic, but it's like, that's the reality of it, right? The mindsets are different, how you're going to articulate, how you're going to read the room, how you're going to read the person, right? It's such a fundamental part of communication.
Yeah, love it, mate. And let's talk about adapting, because I think this is really important. There's a great saying that, you know, growing up, which, you know, it was like, treat people how you want to be treated, but it's actually incorrect. It's treat people how they want to be treated, right? You know, as you realize this, and there's like, you know, certain personality tests and things like that, like a simple one that I think is easy to use is maybe the DISC profiling, but there's many of them that are out there. And being aware of how someone else communicates, so then you can sort of match that level. So do you want to maybe talk a bit about that, about so analyzing someone, so then you can, yeah, connect better with them as well?
Yeah, so every single person on our team has to do two things. We have to do a personality test, and we have to do the 5 love language test. Every single person on our team does it, and I'm almost positive every single one of our clients does do that too, because, and this is one of the first things I ask clients on a call, is how do you like to be communicated with? Do you want a little harsher? Do you not want a little harsher? Do you want this? Do you want that? Right? What way do you want me to go so I can serve you best? Now, that's step one. The real skill comes in when you start to be able to subconsciously understand that while you're mid communication with them. And you only get that by studying the different forms of communication, the different ways people like to be communicated to, the different personality types, right? Like, and then understanding which ones you don't mesh with well. Like for me, me and sarcasm don't get along very well. It's just not my favorite thing. But I have to note that for myself when I am communicating to someone who communicates that way, and that's part of their personality. And I have to not only check myself, right? I really have to check myself so I can serve them the best that I can in the moment, which comes to that being able to understand how that person needs to be spoken to. And a good good friend of mine, Kevin Axtell, he's a fire performer. He's just been on TV, all kinds of cool stuff. He's just one of those cool guys. He has this saying, right? Know your audience. Know your audience. And I took that and I said, Kevin, I'm taking that. I'm going to steal it from you. I'm going to reword it. It's just know who you're speaking to, right? Really know who it is. And yeah. I think that's a fundamental part people forget a lot is they don't think. They just think about themselves, right? And I need to be considerate of who I'm talking to. It's respectful.
Definitely. Love that, man. Really, really powerful. And it reminds me of a story where I helped out our friends like business towards the start of my business journey. And one of the other guys who had many accounts was like, he was going away for about 2 weeks on a holiday. And they're like, can you just look after a few of his major accounts, you know, just in case there's an issue, right? And just fix it. I'm like, yeah, cool. And he was like, this is the biggest paying client that I have. I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, he's not going to be the paying client, right? Like after I deal with him here. And I realized very quickly that it was a very dominant personality, this guy. So a lot of people, you know, especially in the sales world, think I have to build rapport with people, and they sit there talking to people and all this type of stuff. But people that are very dominant do not want to build rapport like that. It's like, just get to the point. I want to do this, right? Yeah. So this is an example of being aware of someone and not just being the same way with everyone. So then all I did was bang, this is what I'm doing. Bang, bang, I'm going to call you later, do this. I was just always to the point. He called the owner, right? My friend of that business after those 2 weeks. And he goes, this is the best 2 weeks that I've had with you, right? And this is not like, I didn't do anything crazy different. It was just how I communicated with him differently and the way he wanted to do it. No fluff, right? There. To get that way. And then, you know, he started changing. The way he was communicating back was very different, right? Instead of being hostile. So that's the power of doing this, right? Is that, you know, it could be a problem client for someone, but if, you know, you could actually, you can actually turn it around, right? Or whatever that is, make sure that you're starting on the right foot instead of on the wrong foot, you know, something too.
Yeah. Yeah. I had this saying I used to use in the dojo, and one of my instructors told me it years ago. He said, there's no bad students, only bad instructors, right? Because if you don't know how to teach that student, it's not the student's fault. It's really your fault, right? And, you know, I had one of the same situations happen. I had this guy come to me. I signed an NDA. He's a very, very high level marketing expert. Like if I said the name, you would know who he was. And he gets on the phone and I go, listen, I know how you operate. This is the three packages I have. What one suits you? He goes, this one. He goes, when can we start? I go, this day or this day? He goes, that day at this time. I go, perfect. I'll see you there. He hung up the phone on me. Trained with me for 6 months, the guy, twice a week. Was one of the best clients I ever had. It was no BS. We would get on, train. I'd serve him. He'd pay me. We'd be good. And it all stemmed from me knowing that's the way he operates because the guy who referred him told me, hey, don't waste his time. This is what he's looking for. I go, perfect. I'll take care of him. Right. And I read it and it was, I wish I didn't sign the NDA with him so I could tell people who he is, but I'm not, I won't out of respect for him, but man, you got to be able to understand that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's a really great point about high level people is that the more high level someone is, the more their time is valuable. So yes, you may want to build a relationship, but you know, don't fluff around too much, is get to the point with them. Because they will respect you, you know, for that. So I think it's a really, really great point that you mentioned there. Let's talk quickly about speaking here now, because I know you do a lot of speaking as well, both virtually and in person. So if people, you know, obviously I do speaking as well myself, but I'd love to hear it from your perspective, because it's a little bit different from speaking one-on-one and generally, which is great, and building a relationship to then being able to speak, you know, whether it's virtually or in person. So what tips or what things can you think about with, you know, people here that are listening that want to like improve their speaking skills in their communication?
Yeah. Yeah. So the first thing, and oh man, I'm going to out myself. This was my number one mess up when I first started speaking, was using what's called safety words, right? And safety words, and I know you smiled, so I know you know what they are already, right? Like, and all these things really take away from your speaking, ability. I just used one. Now that I said it, I spent so many years removing it, and of course I said it, which is so funny. Being able to remove those safety words and understand when you're on stage, you got to own that stage. And owning that stage, one of the key lessons I learned from a speech coach, his name was Joe Williams. He was Tony Robbins' head speech coach for a long time. He's a great guy. He said, take pauses. And I said, I'm Italian and I'm from New Jersey. How am I going to take pauses? He goes, breathe. I said, okay. So when I was on stage, I take the time to pause in between talking. It makes it ominous, but it also gives me time to think. And a lot of people who get on stage rush it. They rush it. They go, I only got 30 minutes. I got to fit this in 30 minutes. Boom, 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 boom. And then it's 10 minutes went by and you got 20 more minutes to fill. Right? Because they removed the safety words and then they went, oh my goodness, I got to own the stage. I got to speak quick. And they didn't take time to slow down and think. Through all my years of teaching, when I was 16, teaching to 25 people, I've done rooms of 150 people, 250 people. Slow down. No one's going anywhere. They paid to be there. They're going to listen, right? Someone told me that. They go, I paid to be here. I'm not going to get up and leave. Take your time. Slow down. Remove the safety words and own the stage. There's too many people who don't get on the stage confidently. They have their shoulders rolled. Their hands are in their pockets, right? They just stand in one spot. Like when I get on stage, I own that thing. Now I'm not running around like a rock concert, but I do walk. I take pauses. I remove the safety words. And the number one thing, which we just spoke about, I go, who is my audience? How many men are in the room? How many women are in the room? How old are they? And I use that in the verbiage I use. When I'm talking to a room full of teenagers, the slang I might use is very different than when there's 40, 50, 60-year-old business owners in there that probably won't understand half the stuff I say to the teens. So those are some of the key points from speaking on stage that I've learned over, I don't even know how many years now. I started when I was 16 on stage. Now I'm 24, so a long time. Those are the three really big things for me. And being able to project your voice, that's a little bonus one. Like being able to own your own voice, because this is where we're going to get into the NLP stuff a little bit, right? Like you go to subconscious where your parents told you, be quiet. So you don't want to raise your voice and raise your voice, right? Like just talk normally and own it is the last little bonus one I'll give. Own your voice, be able to project and own it.
Yeah, love that. So powerful. And I'll give a quick little story on myself here that just reiterates here, right, about the mindset behind owning it is that once when I was in a job for my business, I became appointed the CEO, the chief entertainment officer of the social club, right? And we had a quarterly meeting with all the senior managers and they asked me to do a quick 5-minute speech on the social club, which they'd never done before, just to sort of promote it, right? You know, it promotes good employees. And I just went up. First time speaking, there was about 300 people in the room. I just told a bit of my story in how I started in there and the events. And people were falling asleep before. And I had like a quarter of the audience come up to me after, said that was a really great speech. And I was a little bit nervous, but I made myself excited, right? Because they're very similar energies, right? To be able to change that if you're starting off, right? In that element. Now, the second time I spoke, it was in front of 2,500 people in Los Angeles, right? Second ever time. And that was like, I'm talking years, right? Later, like that, not like it was just after or anything. And I had to really just walk in and go, okay, well, I'm going to own this stage. And I was telling myself, what's going to happen, right? Like, I'm going to be articulate. I'm going to be doing this. So I walk on with so much confidence on that stage, even though I'd never spoken in that magnitude of people before. And you could tell, right? And everyone was like, oh, you did awesome and all this type of stuff, right? So I think you got to bring the confidence. Even if you haven't done it before, you got to walk in confidently with how you're delivering it. And it's never going to be perfect. You know, you build up, you learn these skills that Michael's telling us today, right? And you keep building them over time and you get better at it. And then you maybe have coaches and mentors to help you, other people to give you feedback, right? And then you can keep moving forward. And I think that's a great, I guess, transition about coaching now, you know, how powerful coaching mentoring is. And do you want to maybe talk a little bit about now, obviously, you're transitioning over to, you know, mindset accountability coach and that importance of how you're helping people too.
Yeah, yeah. And that's so crazy. 2,000 people on your second time. Can I share a story really quick? Because it's really, you know, my dad, so you'll laugh. The first time I went to this event, there was 160 people. And I was just going to watch. And he goes, hey, I need to go handle this. Go on stage and speak. And hands me a microphone and goes, go. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So I went on stage. But I've transitioned over into mindset and accountability coaching. I'm the head coach for mindset and accountability at the Food Dog Group, which is where I'm doing a lot of stuff now. And the reason I transitioned, Ethan, is through all the years of, you know, teaching martial arts, talking to business owners about communication, I learned there's no definitive way for them to really hold themselves accountable, right? Like, I'm going to do this. But what's really keeping you to do that? Well, I'm going to go to the gym again in shape, but what's really going to make you? And I learned that there was no, and in my eyes, there's no real expert on it. And I went, I'm going to be that guy. So I decided to start going through all my notes and I went, what gets results? And I looked at myself and I went, well, leverage does. Leverage gets results. And I went, wow, okay. So I started utilizing it in some one-on-one coaching, and I call them my test guinea pigs. I used it on, and I got results. And through that, one of the most proud examples I have, one of the clients I coach one-on-one, I won't share their name, did a very, very successful exit out of a service company for a very large sum of money in a very turbulent time for exits, utilizing the accountability and the mindset tools I was able to teach him with leverage. And I went, wow, if it can do that, what else can it do? And I use it now also for the mindset coaching that I do.
Yeah, love that. You know, leverage creates the results there, and amazing. And I think it's so important here that I did the studies, right? So when I did my MBA, I studied this, and it was, if someone says they're going to do something, they'll do it 20% of the time. If someone invests in someone, they've got regular calls for accountability, right? And everything there, they will do it 90% of the time, which is 4.5 times, right? The output. So just imagine how much quicker and how much more, you know, effectiveness and action and results that you can get from having someone like that, right? So I love what you're doing. It's so important in there, because we can't keep ourselves accountable. It's just the way that it is. And we need people like this externally from us coaches and mentors. And yeah, it's been a powerful show today, mate. You've shared so much gold. It's been a pleasure. And I guess as we're starting to wrap up, what one key piece of advice would you like to give to all the entrepreneurs watching and listening today?
Yeah, I'm going to be greedy and give two, because I can't help myself. Number one, never stop learning. I've gone through a lot of turbulent challenges in my life, and the one thing that's kept me going is I never stop learning. Today, I was just telling Nathan before, I was on a training from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Then I had two calls, and now I'm here. Never, never, never stop learning. I love this one quote. The moment you stop learning is the day you die. It is the day you die. And the second one is have fun. Life is too short not to have fun, and it really is. It's too short to not have fun, not to enjoy the time, not to enjoy the company you have, not to spend time with your significant other, not to spend time with your kids. Do it before it's too late. Please spend time with your loved ones.
Yeah. Love those main points. Completely agree with those. And yeah, we connected to our networks and your dad, and learned about your awesome journey from, you know, dedicating your life to martial arts mastery to starting a business at 16 and now being a coach and mentor as well. Awesome guy, very knowledgeable at such a young age, and I guess a testament to, you know, what people can achieve, that age is only a number. And I'm sure you continue to empower individuals on their path to greatness through transformative coaching and mentorship. Very grateful we connected and catching up in person recently, and look forward to working with you further. So Michael, how can people find you and get in contact with you?
Yeah, so my Instagram is Michael Agliero. No weird things in it, just Michael, MichaelAgliero. It's a great picture of me, good looking guy on there. And then same thing on Facebook, you could connect with me there. I don't really do the LinkedIn thing. Those are the two best places to reach me. Same thing, Michael Agliero on Facebook.
Awesome. Definitely check out Michael on Insta and Facebook there. You know, connect with him, as you can see, so much knowledge in him, and for him to give more in what he's doing in life. And it's been a pleasure interviewing you, mate. And thanks for being on my show.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ethan. I appreciate it.
Thank you, everyone, for watching and listening to this show, where we talk about everything on business growth. And please like, subscribe, and leave us a 5-star review. You can find me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube as Ethan Cassiotis, or visit my website, ethancassiotis.com. If you want to grow and scale your business, you can reach out to me on any platform to see if we're a good fit. I completely agree with you, or do I? The only way you know is if you tune in next time. So until next time, remember that our business grows when we learn skills and take action using them in spite of fear. So remember to design your growth and results.